Good morning. My name is Lindsay, for those of you that don't know me, and I will be preaching for us this morning. We are on our 10th Sunday after Pentecost. That's the season that we're in. And we're starting a new series this morning talking about spiritual practices. It'll be over the next 6 weeks. So I'm going to kick it off for us today. Who in here would say that they have a busy life? Right? Yeah. I mean, all of us, we can raise our hands. So in the 80s and 90s, there was this show that maybe some of you remember called Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. Have y'all seen it? Awesome. In every episode, Robin Leach showcased the lavish lifestyles of ridiculously rich people. And he ended every episode with this phrase. Does anyone know it? Champagne wishes and caviar dreams, right? That was like it. You made it if you were on the show. Every week, viewers, they were shown the private jets, the mansions, the yachts, and how people with money lived. And we were all pretty jealous of it. They were portrayed as not having a care in the world. And their reward or their status symbol was the stuff that they owned. And their success was measured by how little they had to do. Sounds nice, right? I saw a lot of these kinds of yachts when I was nannying in Italy. I like to make people jealous. There it is. So that's that's where I lived. And these yachts would come in and out, and they would, like, you can see them out in the water. They would just put their anchor down and take one of the smaller boats into the dock and hang out in town, and then when they were done, they could travel to the next town. I like to even make people really angry with me and point out where I lived. So I was a nanny, and do you see that white building at the very, very tip top? That's where I lived. It was fun. It was awesome. But they were living their best lives, as people like to say. I don't really know how I would do on months at a time on this yacht, but the idea of it sounds good. So in the 80s and 90s, and I think even into the 2000s, the status symbol to show that you had really made it, like I said, it was displaying your wealth and doing nothing. Lifestyle, the life of luxury was pretty sedentary. Today's status symbol, though, is pretty different. It's busyness. It's no longer about how little you do, but about how much you do. We tend to find ourselves lacking if we think that we're not doing as much as the people around us. And how often have you maybe responded to a text 3 days later and you said, "Gosh, I'm sorry, I was just so busy, I didn't have time to respond," right? I know I've done it. Sometimes life just gets in the way. That's fair, and we forget to respond to people. But it's almost us having to prove, like, this is why I didn't get back to you. My life is just so slammed. My life is so chaotic right now. And I do the same thing all the time. We're constantly trying to prove ourselves or prove our worth by the things that we do. And busyness, like I said, it's become this status symbol. And that, in turn, creates this cycle in our lives that we think, in order to remain valuable, we have to stay busy. And in the midst of all of this busyness, it's hard to slow down and have true quiet. This past Wednesday, we kicked off this series with our dinner and lecture led by Jennifer Kraft. And we're calling this Encountering the Spiritual Life. That's how we want to see this, as an encountering. And she talked about this transition in our lives when something just becomes maybe a space that we're occupying versus it becoming a place in our life. And that happens when we are really connected to it, we're present to our surroundings, and we're present to the people that are in it with us. She asked when we felt the most calm and centered, when we could really focus and be present, and then when we felt the least calm and centered. And I think that's a good segue into this idea of busyness versus peace and having that quiet. So one of my favorite sounds in the world, and this might sound weird to some of you, but I think enough of you will be tracking with me. So you know, like, after you've been at a loud concert or in a really loud restaurant, somewhere out with people, not that you're not having fun, but you get into your car and you're alone and you shut the door. Or even for me, it's after I'm cooking and I've had the fan over my stove on, that like constant whirring. The moment that I turn it off, all the noise just feels like it's sucked out of the room, and it's amazing. I love it. My whole body just sighs with relief. Derek and I used to battle when we shared an office over having a fan on, because he loved the noise, and he wanted it going all the time, and whenever he left the room, better believe I turned that fan off. But those moments are about recentering for me. It's getting back to just who I am in my space alone. Sometimes, especially over the past year, I know I've asked this, but we can ask God, where are you? Where can I find you? Where are you, God? But what I want to challenge us with this morning, and the scriptures that we're reading and what we're going to talk through, is what if the Bible actually flips the script on us and God is asking us where we are? In fact, the very first question that God ever poses to humanity as a whole is to Adam and Eve in the garden. They were hiding because of the shame for the sin that they had committed, and God enters that space, that place with them, and he calls out to them, "Where are you?" Such a simple question, but there's such deep meaning in it. Because God knew exactly where they were. They were hiding, but as we believe, God knows everything. So why would he have to ask Adam and Eve where they were? Well, he was giving them a new point of orientation. He was helping them in the midst of their disconnection with him. He was helping them find their way back to him. He was already there. They needed that point of origin. All they had to do was say, "Here I am." And I think in our busy lives, sometimes we feel like in our Old Testament scripture that we're standing on the mountainside like Elijah in 1 Kings. And we feel that the mountainside is splitting in two. And God is there in the quiet asking, "Where are you?" So Elijah, like I just mentioned, when he encountered God, he was literally fleeing for his life. He had given up. He was done. And God's question to him comes out maybe a little differently than it does with Adam and Eve, because he says, "What are you doing here?" But I think it's the same sort of sense of what he's saying, like, "Where are you?" He was hiding in this cave, and God came to him. And so Elijah is told to go stand on this mountainside, and he does. And the mountain was being split by the wind. It was being destroyed by the earthquake. There was a great fire. But we're told that the Lord was in none of these, because the next line says, there was a sound of sheer silence. That moment when the noise was sucked out of the space that he was in. It was in this moment that Elijah pulled his cloak over his face and he went out and stood before the Lord. "Where are you?" "Here I am, Lord." God was in the silence. There's this old English phrase that we use. I actually jokingly used it with the teachers downstairs because it's kind of chaotic down there. The kids are painting and it's lots of fun. But this phrase is Godspeed. Have y'all heard that one before? And we tend to use it nowadays as like, "Good luck, Godspeed, God be with you." It's like, "I hope things go well for you." But the original meaning of it is, "May God flourish in you." So my question for us is, are we living life at a speed where God can flourish in us? And if not, how do we do that? That idea of God flourishing with us, it begins with being present with where we are and who we are with. In his own ministry, Jesus constantly withdrew from the crowds, even from his disciples, to pray and have time alone with God. He wasn't abandoning the people that he was with, But he recognized his own need to be with the Lord, his need to rest. And Jesus always answered God's calling. Where are you? Here I am. Our other Old Testament passage today was from Exodus, and the Israelites had just escaped Egypt when these Ten Commandments were given to them. God had performed this amazing miracle. He freed them from slavery, from Egypt, and yet their loyalties were already being pulled away elsewhere. They were already creating other idols to worship. They were coming out of a time in history where, quite literally, their time was not their own. They had lived for years and years at the mercy and the whims of the Egyptians who were holding them captive. And God saw that they needed to be reoriented towards him. So these first four commandments, the ones that we read, are about orienting our souls towards God. And then the last six are how we live in place with one another. God had to reteach his people that he was their God and their only one true God. God calls himself a jealous God, meaning he ain't sharing. He had to teach people not to create idols or physical things to bow down to. There was this whole golden calf incident that I don't think that I was taught growing up, where like Moses takes the calf and he melts it down and grinds it and he puts it in their water and makes them drink the idol that they were worshiping. Right, it's intense, it's crazy. The Old Testament has some crazy stories in it. But God was establishing this covenant with his people. The fourth commandment is a gift to us. It's the gift of time. Remember I said the Israelites are coming out of captivity where they had no control over their days or their time. A day off was probably unheard of. So the Sabbath is a day that's set apart and it's holy. In the creation story, going back to that, God sets the example for us, right? He created the world in 6 days and on the seventh day he rested. Not because he was tired. He's God. He doesn't get tired. But he was showing us how to live our own lives. Yes, God tells the Israelites not to work on that seventh day, but to what purpose? What was the point? And it was to be with God. He again is asking his people, where are you? And the Sabbath is their answer, here I am. N.T. Wright says this about the Sabbath. He says, the Sabbath is the time when God's time and our time intersect. Time is such a weird thing, right? Sometimes it slows to a crawl. Sometimes it feels like something that you're doing is never gonna end. It's just so slow. And then sometimes it's so fast, it just feels like it's slipping through our fingers and we desperately want it to slow down. We call time our friend, we call time our enemy. But time is actually where we meet God. In Judaism, they wish each other on the Sabbath, Shabbat Shalom. I'm sure you've heard that phrase before. And with that, they're wishing each other a peaceful day of rest. It's a peaceful day of rest with the Lord. Sabbath is celebrated together with friends and family. The work for the week has been completed. And their focus can be on the people that are at the table with them, sharing a meal. And they can reflect on God's majesty, his creation, his deliverance, and his grace. They can answer God's question in this moment, where are you? Here I am, Lord. The demands of our daily lives wears on us. We constantly feel like we don't have enough time. We judge ourselves and our own productivity against what others are doing. And if we're honest, we usually find ourselves lacking, and so we try to do more. We're believing the lie that we have to do more in order to achieve things and have more value. The Sabbath teaches us that the opposite is true. Now, I know that there are times that we can't change our circumstances. We can't stop raising our children or putting them to bed when they don't want to go. We can't just say, hey, I'm not going to come to work today. I don't feel like it. I'm going to have a Sabbath today. But that's why it's a time set apart from the rest of our week. The Sabbath is a gift. Like I said, it's not a burden or a trap. And in fact, in Mark 2, Jesus said that the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. Walter Brueggemann, an author, he actually wrote a whole book. It's called Sabbath as Resistance. So Sabbath can be like a rebellion against what the world is telling us that life ought to be. Sabbath is that moment when the noise of the world and of our daily lives is suddenly and completely gone. Like I said, when it's kind of sucked out of the room. Our bodies need rhythm. We know this. We have times of activity, times of work, times of play, times of sleep, when our body can restore itself and rest. And our faith requires the same thing. It needs rhythm. God knows we need to work. He knows, again, like I said, that we need to take care of our kids if we have them. We need to clean our house. We need, and I do say this, we need to hang out with our friends because we need people. We need community. We need to spend time on the things we love to do. Those are important. God created those things for us. But God also gave us the gift of time in giving us the Sabbath. We need that time in our lives dedicated only to God. So if your faith feels flat or brittle, is God more of a concept in your life rather than an integral part of it? If God feels far away from you right now, are you calling out in the chaos, asking God where he is, instead of answering God's question, where are you, with, here I am? Like I said earlier, we can't opt out of life altogether or opt out of the world that's in need. God created it. It's precious to him. The people in it and in our lives are precious to him. So I don't think he would ever want us to turn our backs completely on any of those things. We can, however, like I said, subvert what society and culture teaches us life should be focused on. We can experience Sabbath as resistance. So over the next few weeks, and this I'm wrapping it up now, we're going to be exploring these spiritual practices, like I said at the beginning. And as a staff, we're reading this book called Celebration of Discipline. When Laura's daughter saw it, she was like, discipline? Ugh, gross. But it's about spiritual practices in our lives, which are so important to our patterns and to our habits. If you would like to read along with us, we'd love for you to. You can email Laura. We'll talk about that more. And then I'm going to share a little study guide to go with it as well. But I wanted to at least show it to you so you know what we were talking about. One of the distinctions that we really want to make, and I want to say this morning, is that in adding these practices, that can be like, okay, great, I have to add something else to my life, right, to my already busy schedule. But that's not really what they are about. We're not adding things in our lives to try to transform ourselves. We're not trying to better our own faith on our own abilities to do these practices. These practices are the places and the times that God meets us to transform us. So in talking about the Sabbath today, it's not that we need to get better at the Sabbath. It's that God is inviting us into his rest. He's present in the quiet, waiting for us to be present with him. Each week, our bulletin will also have on the very back of it something to correspond with the spiritual practice that we're talking about. And this week, I'm sure as will come to no surprise, is 5 minutes of silence a day. It's having that time, just starting with 5 minutes, that you can spend alone in silence before the Lord. I would even say if that's something you're not used to, don't worry about trying to pray through it. Just sit in it and say, here I am, Lord. Put your phone down, go for a walk, sit on your porch if you have one. Just take a few minutes to be alone in that quiet. Because God is waiting for us in the quiet. And he's saying, where are you? Are we ready to say, here I am?